There we go. Awesome. Just came through. So it's on like a 20-second delay as usual. Alrighty. So, as you can see by the title and description I put up for this video, something that has really bottlenecked our project for a considerable amount of time is the general art style. So obviously the National Socialist Network with Jacob has its own unique style. It's impacted and been influenced by global National Socialist politics, going all the way back from things like Iron March to NRM and other groups in the UK. Obviously there's a general art style that came out of the vanguard, that came out of the purely revolutionary agitation style politics, which is always going to be maintained. This project is not necessarily a counter to that project. It's not an attempt to put that in the background. That aesthetic style is always going to be congruent and part of what we're doing. It may integrate the project a little bit into the wider project, meaning we're going to develop an art style that then NSN becomes complementary to, or becomes a core component of. So the first thing I'll explain is how we got to this point, where this idea came from. Now, obviously, this is an idea that we have not invented. There's nothing new under the sun, and there's been many people in our form of politics for a long time, like even going back to before the Second World War, that have believed in building a new art style. And certainly Mussolini with fascism was that was an absolutely critical evolution of a new futuristic modern blend of a traditional worldview. So it's this what our ideology is when expressed in a physical art style, in an aesthetic art style, is not just purely a return to, say, Greco-Romanism, or purely a return to some sort of ancient or medieval style of artwork or culture. But also it's the exact opposite of, say, Marxist brutalism, where you've got this just soulless bug people just making the most fucking abhorrent and disgusting structures, which are really just the expression of the mindless, soulless machine. It's just concrete and steel, and it is the expression of the machine dominating man, and not the synthesis of, at the time you could call it the third wave or even like late second wave industrial revolution. It's not the synthesis of man learning to dominate and learning to utilize this new era of technology. So obviously, to start with, the project is a 21st century version of a fascist art style or a National Socialist art style. And why I mentioned Mussolini to start with is because fascism as a word is actually a lot more powerful word than National Socialism. Obviously, we are National Socialists, and we don't really shy away from the word fascist. If someone said you're a fascist, it's like, well, yes, sort of. You don't want to get caught up in semantics, like, oh, technically I'm not a fascist, I'm a this. You don't want to get caught up in those semantics. It's like a Marxist-Leninist saying, oh, I'm not a communist, I'm a Marxist-Leninist. Oh, I'm not a socialist, I'm a, they wouldn't do that, and neither should you. You should just basically own it. You don't want to get caught in the sauce. Like, you just come across like a, obviously within our own circles, people can describe their identity in more detail, but what we need is an overtone. What we need is a style that represents everything. And this doesn't mean that we're going to avoid using the term National Socialism, and it doesn't mean we're going to avoid using the term fascism. But the brilliance of the word fascism is that it was a unique word in on itself. Obviously, it stems from the word fasces, which means the bundle of power, the bundle of sticks with the axe on it. It's the idea of centralizing power. It's an ancient Roman symbol, and you'll find it littered all throughout history, even in the United States. For example, the founding of the United States has fasces in the Senate or Congress. I've seen photos of that. So obviously, the 20th century was big on the isms. It was like the fasces isms. And if someone asked you to describe fascism, you could give them a paragraph, you could give them a page, you could give them a book, but one of the best ways to describe our worldview is not actually with paragraphs, books, knowledge. Sometimes a 10-second hype video, that kind of Zuma slop 10-second hype video with the funny music over it. Sometimes that in itself is a more powerful way of expressing our worldview because you're actually showing someone an aesthetic style. You're visually describing what your worldview is, and that is in a lot of ways more powerful. Obviously, you need both, and I don't think we've neglected either. But what we haven't done is we haven't, here in Australia at least, really properly codified a style. And that in itself is not a task that can be done in 1 month or 12 months or even in a decade. Styles take a really long time to develop because they are a living visual expression of an idea. So that's why I wanted to express the idea first. It's not an ism. The name of it doesn't matter too much. I already see some fucking clown in the chat having a go at the name. Because he's a mental midget and isn't actually considering the greatness of the idea. That name for now is a placeholder. It's the best name that I've actually heard of. If the moron has a better name, after finishing the stream, maybe he could put an idea forward. But in the meantime, I've heard about 120 versions of what we could call this aesthetic style. And the version that, sorry, the name that jumped out at me the most, based off my criteria, because the name's not too important. But what I did say was, if we are going to come up with a name for this style, I want it to sound Germanic. I want it to sound Teutonic. It has to sound powerful and masculine. It has to be a powerful name because it has to reflect a big part of what we are, which is we are a martial cult. That's what we are. As a political and racial identity, we are the white men that are not just bending over and bowing before the faggotry and the multiculturalism and just the sickness of liberal democracy. We are the white men that are literally, spiritually fighting back. We actually defend ourselves when we get attacked. And that's something that most people do not do. They do not actually physically defend themselves. And we want to create a culture, an art style that reflects that, but obviously in a beautiful way. There has to be a combination of these things. The reason why I went with a name ending in onic is not just because it sounds good, but also because I specifically said in the criteria that it couldn't be an ism. To me, we're not doing isms anymore, although we are national socialists and there's a national socialism, it's a very 20th century idea. And I don't want an ism. To me, isms are they're not cool. They're not it's not the branding that I want to use for this project. This project in itself is not a political party. It's not a political group. It's just a theme. It's a theme. It's an aesthetic style. It's a visual style that is going to bleed through what we're doing with things like a political party, what we're doing with things like a community group. And you can see that reflected in a lot of ways. You can see it a little bit through the NSN project. Obviously, that's got its own unique version that's led by Jacob Hursan and his visual art style. It's also got a lot to do with the community building that we're doing. So it's not just all militancy. There is obviously the community building element to what we're doing. And if you saw our summer solstice last year, which for most of you was around Christmas time. Obviously, in the southern hemisphere, we're upside down. So we have a summer solstice about 3 days before Christmas. I think we had it on the 21st, but it could be anywhere between the 20th and I think the 22nd. And we had obviously an attempt our first ever go at rebuilding a traditional European holiday with a traditional European aesthetic. Obviously, that holiday, holy day, by definition, is meant to represent a fertility festival. It's meant to be a festival of fertility. It's meant to represent the central harvest, because you have early harvests and you have late harvests. That's meant to represent the peak of summer, the peak harvest. That's the longest day, and it's a time to get together as a community. Some people will disagree with the getting drunk element or drinking, but I think that's what the ancients did. Maybe not to the extent that the 21st century alcohol is brewed so strong as it is now, but certainly there was liveliness, there is animation, there is vitality. It has to be a symbol of vitality, of fertility. And it certainly stirred the pot. A lot of people came out and supported us for doing that, at realizing the cultural and aesthetic nature of such an act, such a holiday, as a community. And obviously, it also drew attention from the system. We had a gay meth addict, a pedophile, write a whole series of articles in the mainstream media attacking us as some sort of evil cults, blonde white baby makers, and that we're just these evil, disgusting people, and then plastered our awesome photos all over the national broadcast, as well as the actual national broadcast, the ABC, also did a documentary on us and used the images from that cultural festival to try to explain that we're this horrible, evil cult, and that we're brainwashing young men and women, and that these young men and women are getting involved in this evil brainwashing cult, and it's so hard for them to leave. They can't leave hate. And then they articulated that our little community day was a hate festival, which is awesome. That's actually awesome. We want to be 50% love and 50% hate. I know a lot of people don't like the cottagecore, but I thought I'd touch on a little bit. This project isn't too much stressed on the cottagecore. I think the cottagecore itself is already quite a fleshed out idea. If you don't know what cottagecore is, it's how do I describe this in a way that isn't going to make Jacob angry? Because anyway, he's obviously focused on the other half. But cottagecore to me is the feminine aesthetic of the botanical garden, of the garden. I think there's two key components of the divine. The divine separates. I hope someone cuts this and sends it just specifically to Jacob to piss him off. There is a God force, there is a life force. And so when you're engaging in any project, political, cultural, whatever, you have to have a total governing worldview. You have to have a total understanding whether a project is implicitly Marxist or Christian or liberal. For a project to succeed, it needs to have an overarching concept, an overarching theme. And for us, whether Christian or pagan, we're all Europeans, we're Aryans. We have a white racial identity, and our white racial identity at the highest level is an expression of the creator. So we believe, if you, I know we're talking about an aesthetic project here, but this is important philosophy behind the aesthetic project. We believe as white people that we are the highest form of creation. So we can acknowledge that there's otters, and there's birds, and there's bees, and they all create things. They make dams, the beavers or whatever, the otters. You've got birds making nests, you've got bees making beehives. A lot of animals create things, and a lot of animals have different levels of animation. They're different tiers of creation. When you see a cockroach, you stomp it. When you see a beautiful horse, like a strong, well-postured, muscular horse, you think to yourself, that is a beautiful creature. That is a noble creature. You don't want to kill it the way you want to kill a cockroach. And what separates us from most of nature is not that they're not beautiful and we're beautiful. It's not that we're not world renouncing. That's not our religion. That's not our political system. We're not world renouncing. We are of the world, but we are created above it. So we are between worlds, in a sense. We are between the creator and the world. We are above the worldliness, but we're not beyond it. We're not rejecting of it. We don't reject the world. We are connected to it. We love the world as much as we love the creator. And any kind of argument between philosophy and religion about how much we love one or the other is kind of semantic and unnecessary, because we're all just bees making the hive. So overall, I think we understand that balance as a hive mind, literally. So in saying that, we believe that there are different races of man, and our race, the white race, is the highest form of creative energy, the highest form of creative spirit. We can assess what Jewish culture is, and we can see how Jews have made Hollywood, how Jews have made porn, how Jews have made interest banking, how Jews have made modern art by its definition. Jewish art is really what it should be called. We can see how they have controlled society to completely destroy the notion of beauty itself. They want to tear down beauty itself. They're absolutely despicable creatures. And then you can look at Africans, for example, whether you hate them or don't hate them. You can objectively look at Africans and you can see what the expression of their art and culture is. You can see that in Africa, they kind of hop around, jump around with sticks, put you know, beads and crap in their ears, but like, you know, like ridiculous. They're kind of absurd. They've got an absurd culture, but you know, they still have a culture that can be clearly expressed. Likewise, the Asians, etc. Obviously, you can see what Judeo-Negro culture is in America, for example, which is appealing to the worst and most baselessness of the Negro. And likewise, you can see where Judeo-Christian or Judeo, you know, the parasitic nature of modern culture has come from, you know, Jewish power eroding white culture. And so what we need to do as a political, this is beyond politics. What we need to do is we need to create a system of aesthetics. We're already creating it. I don't want to say I'm putting a brand name on the whole thing, although I'm going to do my best to put forward a, not necessarily a codified, but pre-World War II, there was an art style, for example, that came out of, I think specifically France, but it really took off a lot in America, Art Deco, or decorative art, and a completely new style of interior design, a completely new style of architecture, of, you know, exterior design, like, you know, building structures. There was a new vision of what the 20th century was going to be, and it was kind of, in a way, it was like liberal democracy's biggest project, and it was quite a successful project in that sense. It was a very liberal, it was like peak liberal democracy. Obviously, it had these fascistic undertones in it, but that wasn't its domineering feature. Obviously, the Italians and the Germans, although they may have had concepts quite similar, they did focus a lot more on the Greco-Roman. They were going a bit more traditional, but they were still doing an expansionist and futurist model. And that's key to this aesthetic style. So if we want to talk about the aesthetic style that we're going to build, the reason why so far I've called it Ingveonic is because that is the group, that is the mega tribe, so to speak, of the Angles, the Saxons, the Jutes, the Danes. It's a primarily northwestern Germanic cultural group that founded the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms in Great Britain. So obviously you have a native Brittonic, which is a Welsh and Celtic people, and obviously these, what became modern England, which became the Anglosphere, which became what we're speaking right now, and 90% of the people paying attention to this, you are more or less primarily the descendants of an Ingveotic people that have mixed in with a Celtic and more Welsh and native Brittonic people. And you may have other European admixture as well, whether that be other types of Germanics, or whether that be and Nordics, or whether that be you know, Slavic or Mediterranean. But ultimately, if you're in America, if you're in Australia, if you're in New Zealand, or if you're in Great Britain or Northwestern Europe, you are more or less you cannot ignore the realities of an Ingveonic mega tribe. That's basically what it is. That has hybridized itself with a whole bunch of other things. But as a style, as an aesthetic style, the reason why I'm wearing the shirt, for example, if you saw in the thumbnail, what you have here is an Yngveotic style. Now, this isn't the be all and end all. This is just a t-shirt that someone made up in the org. It was a combination of people. There was I think the guy there was one, a guy in Sydney designed it, and Tim printed it here in Melbourne. And this, for example, is I don't want you to think like that this is the outcome of the style that I'm building. This is just one tiny little component. This is like if you look at the baby's first steps of a style, this is one of the crawling moments or one of the first steps, so to speak. But it's certainly not the be all and end all. I don't want people to think that this project is like we're building a merchandise range or we're building a branding for a new heavy metal band or something. But what we do have to recognize about branding, about merch, about t-shirts, about a heavy metal band is that if you're building a musical group, you have to all musical groups, all successful musical groups, musical bands, they all understand that they need to have some sort of merchandise range. They all understand that they need to have an aesthetic style attached to their music. And you see that with the cover, the cover work. And that's what we're calling, I guess, in the corporate sort of description of that is called a branding deck. So that's ultimately what we're working on. We're working on a branding deck. And I'm going to give you some parameters because I'm putting out an open tender to encourage graphic designers and encourage people in our scene and even adjacent to our scene that feel the same way, that feel that you don't have to explain what Ferrari is. That's where I'm coming with this. I'm going back to fascism. I'm going back to the Italians. What the Italians did so well was aesthetics. You don't have to explain what Ferrari is. You don't have to write an essay. You don't have to do a podcast. You don't have to do anything except show them a Ferrari. And that is equally as powerful as something like Mein Kampf, as a doctrine, as a political testimony. There's a lot of knowledge and wisdom and strategic discussion, and Mein Kampf is an extremely powerful document. But what we need more than just written documents is we actually need an aesthetic style that summates, that explains in a performative manner, in a performative manner. And this is the key to marketing. This is the key to branding. And we have the best ideas. We have the best product on the market. We do. We have the most subpar advertising. We have the most subpar, like we are getting better. I don't want us to be like a browbeating exercise because it's not. We're actually, for what we are and how much money we have, which is very little, we're actually pretty fucking good. Considering we're in our infancy, our hype videos, our branding, it is coming along. We have moved mountains in that sense. And there's a lot more to do. This is baby's first steps. Obviously, there's people like Rob Rundo. There's people like the Golden One. These guys have had their finger on the pulse for a long time about aesthetics, about meta politics. I have obviously watched and listened to a lot of what these guys have said over the last 5 to 10 years. And definitely, this does, I need to give them recognition for the work that they have put in, the mental work that they've put in, and the physical work that they've put in. Into attempting, or not attempting, that's the wrong way to put it, in actually putting forward an art style. Both different versions of an art style, obviously with two different aesthetics, two different backgrounds, two different visions of what it should be. And what I want to contribute to this group project is my version or our version here in Australia. And between everyone, I think we can build a 21st century fascist aesthetic project that actually accurately and aesthetically displays a neo-white culture. They call us neo-Nazis, for example. Well, we are. I know people shy away from that term, but we are. We want to create a neo-white racism, a new racism, a 21st century racism. And we can study the 20th century, and where the 20th century started to come to a close was obviously with the 1.0s, what we call them, the 1.0s, the skinhead aesthetic. And we had a music scene, for example, which is very crucial for culture. We had, you know, Fortress and Screwdriver and the black metal and the death metal and the heavy rock. We had a music scene and the punk rock, obviously. And that was a very, very core component of the 1.0s. And they had t-shirts, they had branding, they had merchandising. They were trying to build in their own way an aesthetic style. And they did a very good job for the tools that they had, the money that they had, and the support that they had. Even if that's not the style that we're going for, they still put in the work. What is it? ISD, Ian Stewart. So we need to consider, obviously, downstream, how to integrate all these things together. But I don't think that needs to be artistically planned out. For me, you either have the vision or you don't. For me, you have an aesthetic mind or you don't. You either have a knowledge-based mind or you don't. You either have a power-based mind or you don't. Some people have all three. But for me, the building blocks of what we're doing is knowledge, power, and aesthetics. And there's a lot of people working on the knowledge side of things, which is excellent. That's what we need. We do need to expand the knowledge we need to politically educate people. There needs to be an education at a political level. We need to build power. So that's organization in itself. Organizing men and women, organizing families, organizing businesses, organizing media. Organizing is power. Sitting on the internet is not power. There is no power that is derived from sitting on the internet and spectating. There's absolutely 0% power achieved from how many views something gets. You can educate with views. If you get 1 million views and you're saying something that helps educate and put an idea in people's heads, that's important, but it doesn't build power. To build power, you can't just sit there watching some fucking homosexual spick on the internet like Nick Fuentes. You actually have to get involved in real life to some degree, and you're either going to do that secretly or you're going to do that overtly in the open. I believe we get this victory from overtly organizing, and come what may, when you start overtly organizing, the system starts attacking you, and you need to build resilience. You can't just hide from the system forever, because you need to have resistance. So knowledge is important. Knowledge is power, some say. Organizing is power. So when I say power, I mean organizing. And then aesthetics is power. Aesthetics is power. Aesthetics is branding. Aesthetics is culture. And this is what people, we have a lot of artists, we have a lot of people that are doing this as a commercial job. They're architects, they're musicians, they are graphic designers, they are website builders, they are building deck builders, they are social media managers. There are thousands, if not tens of thousands of people that are one step removed from the organizations, the in real life organizations of white nationalism, that do these things as a trade. And how we're going to succeed as a political identity is if all these people actually start coming together and working on a project, a large and expansive group project. So that's not really an introduction. That's just me running through everything. But yeah, what I've taken some notes. I'm probably not going to do streams anymore without notes so that I can just stay on topic. But what I've put here is a summary of what I just said, which is this is a 21st century fascist or national socialist aesthetic project. The idea that the building block of success, of victory, is knowledge, power, and aesthetics. And aesthetics being probably the area where, outside of people like Rob Rundo, the Golden One, I think Bowden understood the power of aesthetics and vitality. Outside of these people, it's not, I don't think it is not enforced, that's not the right word, but it's not pronounced enough. There's a lot of aesthetics bros on Twitter, I've noticed. And the page that I'm actually most inspired by at the moment is a page called Teutonic Aesthetics. When I was talking about these ideas with friends, They actually forwarded me some of the artwork from this guy, and I was amazed at the power of the hive mind. There's someone out there that has basically for years been building an art style that I had never even seen before. And then I'm talking to people about how we need to build an art style, and someone's already doing like not 100%, but I don't think it's one person that could possibly build this, but very, very beautiful art style, very clean, very aesthetic, a balance of tradition and the historical nature of the Inveonic or Teutonic aesthetic. Mixed in with modern day graphic design approach, very clean, something that has failed certainly in the modern world is this minimalism concept. It's certainly a failed concept. Obviously, there's a lot of clutter, there's a lot of mess. No one's anywhere near as organized as they need to be. We are absolute midgets compared to our forefathers, that's something that every individual, like the world is a messy place. The spirit is messy at the moment. And downstream of that is an attempt to grasp control through minimalism, through if I own less things, or if we have just white walls, then there can't be any mess. And it's a philosophy of despair, but I think it needs to be balanced with maximalism. Obviously, there's the opposite of minimalism, which is where things are so cluttered, where there's too much aesthetic, and you can't even accurately see the distinction of the aesthetic style because there's just too much going on. So, in its very nature, it has to be clean, it has to be neat, it has to be this halfway point between a minimalism and a maximalist idea. Now, obviously, you'll call me a hypocrite because I'm no Adolf Hitler when it comes to he was obviously influenced quite heavily, as Jordan Peterson talks about, by disease in the trenches and the lack of cleanliness, and so there was this hygiene focus, artistic hygiene, cultural hygiene, racial hygiene, everything kind of hygiene or cleanliness as a big core component of him. But Jordan Peterson says, clean up your own room, and then his room's even fucking messier than mine. So obviously, we can give advice to each other that's not actually hypocritical because it is something that we all need to engage in. And it does tie into an art style. Art styles, to be successful, to revolt against this Jewish world, because we should really call it that instead of the modern world, to revolt against the Jewish world, we do need to create a really clean, a clean-cut art style. This is bigger than just a t-shirt branding. This is bigger than just a political pamphleting, for example. It is a branding deck that can apply to basically anything, any concept, any visual concept. And one thing that the left are actually bad at, but they do a lot of it, but they're bad at it, is they treat politics as performance art, which is correct. Politics is performance art. Well, politics is power, but you have to LARP. You have to have some sort of performance art. Now, they are actually worse at it than us. They just have a lot of Jewish money behind them, but their performance art is really, really cringe. Now, people will attack us as to our cringeness because we're amateurs. We are amateurs. We are not as professional as we should be, but that takes a long time. That's a trade. We have to build white nationalist. Or National Socialist politics as a trade. We have to build institutions. We have to build teaching schools. We have to build an entire institution that teaches and enhances and elevates art, culture, knowledge. The martial arts. The physical training aspect of it. Health, fitness. All of these things need to all grow out of a series of institutions. And ideally, the best of the best would come out of a central institution. And so that's something that we're behind on, but the left can never actually beat us. The anti-whites are an ugly and weak people. They're spiteful mutants, they're Jews, they're communist freaks, they're psychopathic liberals, that pretend to care about the collective, and they're just using politics as a careerist platform, and you're starting to see that with like the Teals and well, I mean, you see it with all political parties, but you're starting to see this new wave of political agents where politics is considered not statecraft, it's not considered civil service, it's considered a career path. That's definitely better than treating it as an amateur, but certainly that's not the correct energy that comes from this really tacky and corporate mentality, and you can see that in their art style. You can see that in their performance art. You can see that in the way that they're trying to succeed in politics. So everything bleeds through everything. That's the central contention that I want to get people to. Everything bleeds through everything. So an art style isn't just a way of reflecting our politics, but it's a way of enhancing it. That if we can work on the of the aesthetics of our performance art, then it will enhance everything. It will enhance our organizing. It will enhance our ideas. It will enhance our community building. So what we're doing politically is downstream of these important, you could call, meta-political concepts, and that we impact the consciousness and the unconsciousness or the subconscious through aesthetics and art. Branding is absolutely crucial to building a new era. So what we're doing, we have to treat the 21st century. We're 25 years into it. We're a quarter of the way into the 21st century. The 21st century hasn't been defined yet, but it's about to be. The 21st century has not had its real Art Deco moment the way the 20th century has. We need to understand the power of how things like architecture changed in the 60s and 70s. I'm not talking about Art Deco. I'm talking about the sexual revolution. So fast forward 40 years, you've got America going from quite a wholesome nation, or the West being quite wholesome, to then degrading into this Woodstock, this performance art, this agrarian kind of hippie movement. The basically the takeover of the left is the takeover of this kind of not world renouncing, but a little bit too in love with the world and not too much in love with the creator, completely mistakening the balance between those forces, and that creates this kind of hippie movement where people are degrading back into this kind of they're attracted to Eastern ideals, they're attracted to Hinduism, they're attracted to sitting under a tree and meditating, or getting stoned, or getting on mushrooms and listening to a nigger play music at Woodstock. And then you see that also these people became professionals, and you see that subculture breed and bleed into the changes in architecture and art, culture, movies, everything. So we need to realize that what we're doing politically has the opportunity, if we do it properly, to bleed into music, to bleed into architecture, to bleed into all sorts of different art styles. And we need to dominate. We need to work out a way of dominating it. And I can only do that from a political perspective. I'm not a artist. I can only do it from a political perspective by incorporating the best artists we have, the best graphic designers, the best culture creators that we have, incorporating them into the group project. So, again, it has to be a balance. If you study, that whole Sudden Hoo, the burial chamber where they found the Anglo-Saxon king, and you see that this is a martial warlike people, but they had absolutely beautiful jewelry, like the art style. The brooches, the inlay, the silver work and the gold work, is just absolutely incredible. It's this really unique and specifically Teutonic or Northwestern European style, that obviously is similar to a lot of the Greco-Roman stuff as well. But you can see a really beautiful and civilized nature to this art style, but they're regarded as these heathen barbarians. And so there's got to be a balance between beauty and the scariness, you know, the barbarity, the barbarians. It's got to be a balance. Our art style, if you're going to summate it, it's this balance between the civilized and the barbarian. It's the balance between the fertile and the violent. It's the balance between, as I said, these two main life creation forces that stem from the ultimate God force, the ultimate life force, and a balance, of course, between the traditional and futurism. So the only other notes I've got here is that it's an all-encompassing political branding. And so that ties in with things like building a website. Like, how is this applied is probably the last chapter before I go to the chat and do a Q&A or flesh out some more ideas as they come to me. But how does this apply to building a political party? Well, obviously a political party or a political movement, which is what we're building greater than a political party, is we're trying to completely revitalize white culture. We're trying to completely revitalize white people, is a better way to put it. And downstream of revitalizing white people and to spiritually and politically charge them with energy, to actually charge them up, to actually feel the fact that they're white again, and be strong in that sense. It has to be a strong sense of identity. When you have these fucking non-whites and these Jews, they'll say, same thing, but they'll say, obviously you got to discern sometimes between this kind of traitor race and the the races that just can't comprehend what's going on. They'll say this nonsense like, what is white culture? And obviously we can show them the 10-second hype video that has all the Greco-Roman stuff and sudden who and da 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 da. And you can show them that 10-second little TikTok edit, or there's like 30-second Instagram edits, and they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. And also obviously we're speaking white culture right now. We're speaking English, which is Anglish, which is an Ingvaeonic language. So, but, I don't want to say it's a slave morality to argue. I don't believe that in entirety, but I think there's a master morality that is even more powerful than arguing. And that is just doing. That is just becoming. I believe that argument will disappear from the ether. It won't even exist. We have to smash the argument out of existence without even arguing it. We don't need to argue it. We obviously know, but what we need to do is enforce. We know, but we need to deliver. We need to imprint. We need to put forth, dominate. We need to actually dominate the psyche, dominate society with this white culture, with this new white culture, this 21st century fascism, this 21st century white revitalization, revivalism. So there's obviously a lot of words there, a lot of words that mean a lot of different things. Any one of those words could be used, or any combination of those words could be used to describe this art style, this culture style. But obviously, as I was saying, going back to the drawing board, how does this apply to a political party or a political movement in its infancy? Well, just the basic things like a website, the basic things like merchandise or clothing, basic things like flags, banners, and promotional material. So if you're getting something in your letterbox, when it's Liberal Party or Labor Party or Republican or Democrat, it's always boring. It's always gay, which a better way to describe it is not gay, because obviously some people think that means happy, but it's infertile. It's ultimately infertile. It's boring, it's infertile, and it's weak. So these things are the opposite of what we need to be doing. We can tell what we need to do by looking at what the enemy is doing and doing the opposite. They're boring, they're infertile, and they're weak. So our political messaging, our political aesthetic, our political branding needs to be interesting. It needs to be strong, and it needs to be fertile. Now, how do you describe fertility in a political pamphlet? Well, it needs to be beautiful. It needs to be beautiful, but not, I'm not saying cottagecore. I didn't say cottagecore. I think that's half of it from the in real life community gatherings. But there needs to be, and I've put up online, if you haven't already seen it, then you probably don't follow my Telegram much because it's blocked. But I can put it up online again. This Teutonic aesthetic, the artwork that he found and integrated. There's another artist on Pinterest that I found that was building the original artwork of these like kind of Germanic warriors, these Anglo-Saxon warriors, this kind of art style. And then obviously this Teutonic aesthetics guys molded that into just some very, very interesting, another interesting art style. And it's this layered project. It's not one man doing all the work. There's multiple things that are coming to the table to make something look the way it does. And if you've seen the one I'm describing, and I will post it before the stream is done, you can actually see the inlay. You can see the Anglo-Saxon or Ingveonic weave work or knot work in the shield and in the jewelry and in the sword. And it's absolutely outstanding. And a little bit of that is what's missing from politics in general. When you go on the White House website, for example, which I've been on, which is actually a decent website. It's nice and neat and clean. Donald Trump has a decent aesthetic. He's not an idiot. But it's boring. It's bureaucratic. It's neat and clean. Okay, that's two boxes, but it has no other boxes ticked. It's not powerful. The only thing powerful on the Donald Trump website, again, if I was a tech guy, I'd put up the website next to me and I'd show you and I'd scroll through it and I'd say, this is neat, this is clean, this has got some basic aesthetic concepts to it, but, and it's got a little bit of power to it because it's got a big cutout of Donald Trump in it. So if you're watching this and you're listening, maybe check out that website, the White House website, but it's boring. It doesn't have any actual culture embedded into it. It doesn't have any art embedded into it because it's liberal democracy, and liberal democracy is sterile and infertile, and it continues to become more and more so as it goes. So we don't want to be too maximalist. We don't want a website that's got too much going on, but we need to work out a way of integrating a little bit of culture, a little bit of art, a little bit of beauty, a little bit of weave work, and weave that into a militant art style. There's a way of balancing it, and that's an important concept. And that will happen as well with things like a brochure. When you get a brochure, a political brochure, the ideas on it are great. Words, 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 words. Cool. But nobody fucking cares, right? Like 10% will read it. 10% will read it at best. 90%, it's either boring or it's cool. That's it. They might read a little bit if they think it's cool. There's probably more chance they're going to read it if it's cool. But when you get your Liberal Party or Labour Party pamphlet in the mail, it's just garbage. These people are fucking idiots. They have all the money, but they have no brains. We have no money, and we actually have I guess some sort of consciousness as to how things are meant to be, but we can't produce them because we haven't organized enough manpower together, which is greater than money, because really they're using their money to try to subcontract people to do work for them. Obviously, we want to be able to pay people, and I'm interested in whether that will help by putting a monetary sum as to this art style. But I want to put out an open tender to the public, to the supporters, to people that are involved, to help us build this. I'm not sure exactly how we could go about, like, what is what worth? Like, if someone builds this art style, if they built the whole branding deck, obviously, if they do a good job with it, that's technically millions of dollars worth of work. We don't have that kind of money. To really build this style properly for an Australian white nationalist perspective is $1 million plus project if you were coming at it from a corporate perspective. Because what we need to do is something greater than Nike, greater than Coca-Cola, greater than Adidas. What we need to do is create a completely new, an individualized, itemized, tokenized version of the current corporate marketing culture. We actually need to create a completely new marketing culture. Now, that is a huge task. That's millions of dollars worth of work. But if it's done out of love and done out of political interest, it's not measured in money. It's not something you can measure in money. Art can't really be measured in money. Only this corporate liberal democracy can do that. It'd be good to compensate people for their time, whether that's $1,000 or $500 or something like that. We could probably afford that. I could put that in the tender. If someone really built a great branding deck, you know, I would be happy to put forward a couple grand for the project, which is a significant amount of our finances at the current point. But this is something, this is an investment more than anything. Someone that helps us build this, and I'm assuming there's going to be 10, 20, 30 people that are going to reach out to me. I've already had half a dozen. Since this project's been quite private, it's so far a private project. I'm going through the motions now of making it a public project in the sense of who is interested in reaching out and helping build things like a branding deck, so that we can then, we've got a branding deck manager at the moment that a friend of mine is managing. I have another guy that's helping me with, I have a couple guys helping me with the merch line. None of this is in full swing yet, but this has to be a major project for white nationalism globally, in their own respective countries. And I know a lot of the smaller, political groups, you know, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, in, some smaller German groups, some smaller French groups, some smaller Scandinavian and English groups, and a lot of American groups reach out to me on a regular basis, to ask for, advice, and help. I also have people from all over the world. I have like, Iranians, Armenians, not Iranians, is probably a bad way to put it, but like, like whatever that country is north of Iran. I don't think they're Iranians, but like Armenians, and there's another group of people there. They're in like a war or something at the moment. And they're like, it's like, there's like Natsok groups in like random countries in the Caucasus Mountains, like fighting each other. It's bizarre. It's like Russia, Ukraine, but even more niche. But I have people like, and I don't really respond to them because I just don't have the time and energy to focus on the Caucasus Mountains. But obviously I respond to like the Dutch guys and the English guys and stuff like that. I guess that's kind of like a form of racism. But I'm sure there's that Armenian guy that I'm talking about is probably watching this at the moment being like, you fucking asshole, reply to my messages. I just don't have time to work on the Armenian aesthetic. It's going to come with its own thing. It's certainly going to be its own style in itself. And a lot of these smaller groups are going to be influenced by what we do, whether good or bad. And obviously the bigger groups already have this concept down pat. I don't know why I went on that tangent, but I'm just saying that what we do here in Australia, you'd be absolutely amazed at the kind of people that reach out when we do something here in Australia, that reach out to us just globally, just on the other side of the world, not even in Europe a lot of the time or America, that are like, hey man, it's awesome what you're doing. You know, I'm doing something similar in... I had a guy, I think from like Albania recently, and I was just like, what the fuck? But anyway, yeah, so it's amazing how many people you can inspire when you do something correctly. So, I want to publicize this, hence the stream. I know I said I wasn't gonna do any more streams for a while because I've got so much on my plate, but I've had the conversation I'm having right now with you, I've had about, I think this is the fourth or fifth time I've had it in 3 weeks. But with individuals at individual meetings. So I'm doing it like this because, that way I can just forward someone the stream and say, hey, if you want, you know, if you want more, understanding of where I'm going with this project, you know, that's what this is about. So I'll check the chat. I have a breather. You probably need a breather as well because I just rant and rave for like an hour straight. Yeah, that's the project. That's the project. Yngwie Onnek at this stage. The reason why, I know you're breathing, but a little bit off topic, not off topic, but a little bit, it's not even esoteric, it's just a bit of depth to it, is I had a friend that autistically corrected me and said, oh, it's not Julius Caesar. You got to stop saying Julius Caesar on stream, Tom. It's Julius Kaiser. And I was just like, that is fucking awesome. That is, I've honestly never heard anyone say, and I don't know whether that's true or not. A lot of people say that's true. A lot of people that speak or are learning Latin say that's true. That's proper Latin. That's proper hard Latin as opposed to church Latin. There's church Latin and there's hard Latin. And hard Latin, or that's not the way they describe it, but there's obviously the ancient Latin and then there's the church Latin. And the ancient Latin is like, it's not a Germanic language, I don't want to say that, but it's from the same root race that Germans are. If we can say there's a root Aryan race and they became, Greeks, they became Indus Valley civilization, they became Romans, they became Scythians, they became Germans. If we say that there's a root race, a root Aryan race, the root, Proto-Indo-European, the root language was a very strong and masculine sound. And I believe that this project in itself is greater than just aesthetic, because it actually ties in with language. It ties in with, I've autistically gone on, done streams where I've explained that we need to teach here in Australia Icelandic and ancient German languages as our second and third languages in school. Not for political, direct political reasons. Like in school, you might learn Chinese or Indonesian because they're our neighbors, or you might learn an European language like French because it's spoken a lot around the world, or Spanish. I don't want to learn Chinese or Indonesian or French or Spanish. We need to learn Icelandic. We need to learn ancient Nordic languages. We need to learn Germanic. We need to learn hard Latin. We need to learn these masculine languages and get rid of the fucking pussyfooting around that we have within the English language. We need this conversation here in a different, in an ancient language would probably take 10 minutes, not an hour. I truly believe that because it controls the brain. It controls the brain. So I want Ingveotic. Ingveonic. I don't want a new English art style. I want Ingveonic. Like I want something hard. I want Julius Caesar. Like I want something that is staunch. And I think that ties in with Australia. I don't think Australia should be like, oh, we don't need to do it that way because we've got fucking Wattle Day and we've got Banjo Patterson and we like to me it's like that's cool and obviously we want to revitalize that stuff as well. But to me, it's like, let's go to the root. Let's tap into the root and let's really pull out something. Because what Australian culture is we are a fortress in the southern hemisphere surrounded by 6 billion non-whites. We are the outpost of the white race, like South Africa. South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, we are the fucking outpost. We are the outpost. We're not la-di-da fucking Frenchmen. No offense to my French friends, but you know what I mean? We're not, this is not Art Deco. This is Ingveonic. We are fucking 21st century Vikings in the fucking southern hemisphere, just surrounded by, like, you should see the threat we're under geopolitically. Like, it is nothing. Like, what you guys have in Europe, you got niggers in Sweden, I understand that. You don't have the threat we have here in Australia. We are under the most stress. The South Africans, the Boers, the Australians and the New Zealanders, we are under the most threat because they're not just inside the gates. They're not just, you've got them inside the gates, we have got them inside the gates. But although there's no land border between China, India, and us, there's no land border like there is Mexico, the United States. How many Mexicans are there? There's 200 million whites, and there's what, 150 million Mexicans, half of which are probably in America. And it's like, there's 20 million whites. And there's 1.4 billion Chinamen. Like we are staunch by nature and staunch by necessity. So this culture that we're building, this aesthetic style, has to be staunch, but it also has to be brilliant. It has to be staunch and brilliant. It has to be a balancing act. Australians are innovative. We have great initiative, like the Boers, like the New Zealanders. Great initiative. And we are both staunch and innovative. So that's kind of two more words to describe what we need to create. How do you visually express that? And obviously we're not doing fucking communist brutalism. And also I don't like a lot of the one area where the Italians went wrong was they did go too much into the kind of that kind of brutalistic look. I think it's and some of the I think the Hungarians and maybe the Romanians as well. They went a little bit too brutalistic, even with their fascism, which again, I won't get into too much detail, but that you see that. You see that in the politics a little bit as well. You see that what is it? Junger, Ernst Junger. You see that in the worker. You see that obviously he's not a national socialist or a fascist, but you see that in the theory of the day, where it's like integrating this new giant mega industry. Sorry, I just gotta close the door. Hold on, sir. You see that a lot in integrating this new industrial man, and we obviously have to work out how to integrate the industrial man and industrial revolution into it. We can't abscond from reality. We have to integrate it and synthesize it in a way of, whenever a new technology comes about, obviously it's quite brutal to begin with, whether that's buildings made of stone or buildings made of wood or buildings made of concrete. They're always going to be very utile or utilitarian and brutal to begin with. And then it's like, how do we make this staunch, brutal concept into actually something that's beautiful? And I think that's got to be one of our main missions architecturally and artistically for the 21st century. I said I'd pause 10 minutes ago. I didn't. I'm pausing now. Speaking of, Teutonic aesthetics finally got back to us. Awesome. Well, I got to write up a post then specifically for him. Because that guy's on the money, absolutely on the money. There's some people that just have it. They just have it. There's a visual style. I don't have it in the sense that I can't produce it. I just don't have the skills, the time, the energy to dedicate myself to. I wish I was an artist like Hitler. I wish I. It was one thing that I was hoping in prison to practice more, but I had only just started around the 6 month mark. I was mostly focused on writing. And writing is boring and it's not gay, it's not infertile, it is fertile. Writing can be very fertile. It puts ideas in the mind. It's a fertile concept. But I really wanted to work on drawing while I was in prison. And I got pulled out early, which I have a family now, so for better or worse, it was probably a good thing. But yeah, that was certainly something that I was trying to work on because some people just have it. They have that art style. And I do think that if I worked on it for a decade, I would be able to get it. But some people have already done that decades worth of work, so that saves all of us a lot of time. But what I think I can help with the project, other than obviously being the leader of the organization and ultimately rubber stamping anything that we're going to put as a pamphlet, leaflet, banner, whatever. Totem as well, that was another thing that I didn't mention. Totem, as you know, all the states here in Victoria, the sub branches, or they're not sub branches, they're the states by definition. Of our organization, they each have like a totem. They have a small, just black and white symbol that whether it's a rune or an animal that represents the state. And I think that's important. I obviously it's clear where the influences like that are from. Sorry, there's a crow outside my window with a cracker, and he's looking at me. That's hilarious. Yeah, I love crows. Crows are an example. One of the totems is a crow. I think the South Australians use a crow. You can see where the influence where that is. It's got a Greco-Roman influence. Sorry, it's just got an ancient Aryan influence. It's not just the Romans that did it. I mean, the Celtics did it, the Germanics did it, everyone did it. Everyone had this kind of totem, both in banner form and both in a kind of a three-dimensional obviously we're gonna get casts made up of the totems. And that ties in with the project. Obviously, that is baby's first steps. A lot of people have complained to me that it doesn't look very good. It's not very aesthetic. It's very bare bones, and it doesn't have a distinct and unique art style. And it borders on something that we've always tried to avoid, which is cringe. It borders on the what was described to me was Manly Sea Eagles. It borders on this kind of corporate footy team logo crap. Which is just garbage. They're absolute garbage. They don't look good. They don't look aesthetic. Here in Australia, and especially in New World countries, there isn't that depth of artistic style for even just the most basic bare bones things like football teams. And another thing that certainly we need to avoid massively, if you haven't already seen it, I want you to Google Trumpet of Patriots. I'll do it as well at the same time as you. Trumpet of Patriots, and then click on the Wikipedia, and then have a look at the art style that's being used. Actually, go images, because the Wikipedia doesn't show the full cringe. If you go images, nothing's really coming up. They've kind of cleaned it out a little bit. But yeah, it is absolutely, absolutely horrendous. Clive Palmer, $100 million. I've obviously whinged about it on stream before. Just absolute crap. The guy's got all the money in the world, but he's got a lot of really, really bad ideas. And it's ultimately just a party to funnel votes into the Liberal Party. But this is our competition. These people, they don't have the vision. They don't understand. They just don't get it. We have the vision. We do understand. It's about having the time, energy, manpower, money to get the project done. So that's absolutely crucial that we take this seriously. But yeah, we do need to avoid that that soccer or football club kind of cringe aesthetic. But we do need to have banners. It's good to have subdivision. So we've got a national organization, we've got our national branding. But it's good for each state to have their own totem, their own, like, you know, this division, that division, so to speak. I'll go through the comments. So the oldest comment I've got is from 37 minutes ago. So if you asked anything in the first half an hour, I cannot answer your question. But going through, someone says, also don't want anyone looking at your stream. Had to load up. Okay, where to donate? We have Give, Send, Go. It's on my Telegram. It'll just be White Australia. Yeah, people just saying the obvious modern artist slop. Someone says, whenever I get Labour or Tory party, so he's obviously English, Tory is the Conservative Party pamphlets in the post, I roll my eyes at how uninspiring and lacking in a sense of energy it is. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's where I'm getting at. It's just completely uninspiring. We all know that leftist commies are our enemy, but don't realize that the Conservatives are even worse. They absorb young people, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, of course. NS aesthetics mog everyone and they know it. Normies admit that the Germans were the most stylish. Exactly. That's something that I didn't really cover in the first hour was I touched on it briefly, like how Mussolini created fascism and how the Italians are very good at aesthetics. They understand it, like Ferrari, Lamborghini, fascism. They have this very interesting ability to really grasp it. But the Germans, known as being quite a sterile and boring people, they did it absolutely fantastically. And some of the best aesthetics I've seen coming out of the National Socialists in Germany is you see these small towns that are these traditional towns, like they've got that beautiful arts architecture style, the kind of like Austrian Alps, kind of neo-Nordic kind of 3-4 story apartment building. Well, they're not apartment buildings, but they're these like big townhouses, and it's all made out of wood, and they've got the big balconies that lead over onto the street. And I like that architecture. That's probably my favorite style. I want to create like a neo-Germanic architecture for that. It's like the Don't take this word the wrong way, but it's that Viking longhouse. I'm not talking the feminist longhouse. I'm talking the Viking longhouse. We've had our issues with the discernment of that word. I know. I'll get over it. We'll work it out. I will codify it somehow. But that Viking longhouse aesthetic in the 18th and 19th century just became really nice. When you look at these like giant ski lodges up in the Alps, like that is just so fucking cool. Like, that's for me, like the Bergdorf or however you pronounce it, like the Wolf's Lair, just these like holiday homes and ski lodges, like these big buildings up in the mountains. It's just fucking beautiful. It's just such a beautiful expression of our Germanic soul, our European soul. I do prefer, I much prefer it to the kind of the stone buildings of the Romans and Greeks. Much prefer it in its style. I think there's a way of, ultimately we do need to build things really properly out of stone again. You see that in the stone foundation of a lot of these buildings. They're built out of stone, the first floor, and then you see the timbers. Anyway, I won't get too lost in the sauce on that, but that's absolutely crucial as well. But what I was saying is these beautiful buildings, small stone foundation, and then these very large wood buildings, 2, 3, 4 stories sometimes. So it's very traditional. And then you see the ginormous NS flags, like just huge swastikas. And like the wood on the stone, the brown on the gray, has quite a nice aesthetic to it. But then the bright red just beaming down. And then you've got the the black block, you know, you've got the SS marching through the street underneath it, and you're just like, it's just, what's that meme? It's like, it was just perfect. Every single last moment of it, perfect. It's just absolutely perfect. I mean, that is an aesthetic masterpiece. And very, very German. Very, very German, obviously. And we want to do something here in Australia like that, but the Australian version of it, which I think you can imagine, but very hard to put down on paper. Where are we? Hello, Thomas. What do you think about nationalists reclaiming classical music as a whole? Many of the listeners are aging boomers, and the white youth that listen to it are equal in numbers to Orientals, both a small minority. Classical music is one of the genres that's explicitly white. Yeah, I love classical music. I need to listen to it more often. It's part of the project, absolutely. We ultimately, and I don't think this is going to happen any time in the next 20 years, we ultimately need to make a... I don't have a degree in music. I don't have a degree in anything except racism. But my understanding of classical music as a historical concept is it is the end point of organizing musical minds together in mass. It's the end point. It's the high point of culture. Like if you think of Wagner, if you think of the late 19th century, and even to an extent the early 20th century, you see it's just like the absolute peak of Western civilization from a musical perspective. And it's the peak of the centralization of industrial mass human population, like these cities. It can only come from cities. That like an orchestra can't come from like a small town. Like it doesn't work like that. You could build a choir, you could build a folk band, you could build something small, but it's like it's inherently the peak of white industry, centralization, civilization. It's the peak of the 2000 year age that we just lived through, the kind of post-Roman age of what we call Western civilization, versus obviously, so that's top down. When you think about it, that's actually top down. That requires huge amounts of centralizations of people, a conductor, all these instruments and orchestra and all these trades, all these people that have dedicated 10, 20, 30 years of their life to their one little individual trade, just being this one little component, and then a mastermind, a genius of the race, like Wagner, or, you know, you can go back further and go to Beethoven and Mozart and all that. But like, you know, I'm specifically saying this because obviously Hitler was a big fan, but you've got a genius of the race, which is this collective expression of the racial soul, being able to coordinate and conduct all the energies into a fine-tuned display of art and culture and sound and vibration, the vibration of the good vibes, so to speak. And so that is, you know, that's impressive. How do we redo that again? I think we're a long, long way off that. We are like more than 20 years away. That is such a massive task because we don't have the building blocks. We don't have any of the building blocks to even get there, to be able to produce a new version of that. But what we do have is the ability to build folk music. And that's obviously what Rondo has been trying to focus on. And a lot of people argue that, hold on a minute. That's rap. That's, you know, that's wigger shit. That's cringe and it's gay and it's nigger shit. But what they don't understand is that folk music doesn't mean purely the reproduction of an art style, you know, with the acoustic guitar and, you know, these kind of folk tunes. When I say folk music, I mean like the working class of whites in America. That's the equipment that they have. That's the tools that they have. Like they haven't even built up to the point to be able to produce that. And so that is what is going to appeal to people that are living in the lower class of industrialized, you know, megapolis, like the society. So whether you like it or don't like it is irrelevant. It is a product of that subculture, which millions of white people live in. Should we elevate people out of it? Sure, absolutely. But almost anything is better than nothing. People that complain about it, it's like, well, what music would you put in its stead? Because people always argue when we put rap in our videos, and it's like, I've never put rap in a video. But obviously the young guy that makes the video, that's clearly the music that he listens to. And people, when they make hype videos, they insert part of their subcultural identity into it. But also that which you feed grows, and you know that which you put out you attract. So there's obviously that fundamental law of nature that needs to be considered as well when we need to lift our game. But generally, as a general rule, folk music is where it's at. Folk music, not necessarily from this neo, like a lot of people disagree with me on my take that that's folk music. It's folk music for that kind of folk. But what we need to create is a new folk, and therefore a new music will derive organically out of that new folk. So I hope that answers your question. That was a long-winded answer, but very important to understand how music ties in with this as well. Someone's mentioning Varg as well. Yeah, Varg has always worked on this project. Regardless of what you think of Varg, whether you like him or you don't like him, he's always been honest about the need for this as a project. Obviously, he's been doing his own projects. He is a musician. He is a very talented musician. I have been incredibly inspired by Varg's music. Not the heavy metal stuff. I actually really dislike heavy metal, and black metal and death metal. That's just me personally. That I cop criticism for that all the time. But it just does not appeal to my soul. I am just a very different, wired human being. I find it very disruptive to my sensitive energies. I'm a bitch, clearly. I've clearly got, because I like anything that has the deep drums. I like anything that actually has the war and martial sounds to it. I just don't like the screamo. For me, I like war music. I like heavy music. But I don't like heavy metal. I don't know if it's the screeching of the guitars or the screeching of the voices. I just don't like it. It doesn't appeal to me at all. I've always found it really extremely against my own taste and sensibilities. And I could listen to, you know, again, call me a wig or whatever. I could listen to what Rob Rondo's producing, and I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be too concerned with it. The only time I've really been okay with it is when I'm in the gym. Like if I'm in the gym and I'm lifting weights, heavy metal, I can tolerate it. But outside of the gym, I can't really. I'll just walk out of the room. I can't really have it on. I've never been to one of those concerts. I've been to practices. I've had guys in the scene practice, and I've been and visited. And actually, it was a lot better in person. So I think that might have something to do with it. So don't think I hate it. It's all bad. Has to go in the bin. I have actually listened to some practices in person, although I've never been to a concert. And I was actually much more impressed with it in person. I think I could feel the energy better in person. But through the computer or through the phone, yeah, I can't stand it, to be honest. And also, when I saw it in person, it wasn't very screamo. It wasn't very screamy or screechy. It was just, it was that heavy. It was dark. It was deep. It was very masculine. It was very powerful. I had a lot of appreciation for it in that one sphere. Yeah, what I like about Varg's music is his Thulean stuff. I like his kind of mystery Thulean, his adventure music. He's obviously made this kind of heavy war music. I've always said to people, you know, I don't have a PhD in fucking music, but I've always considered music to fall into three categories. You've got like war music, you've got fertility music, and you've got mystery or journey music. Like music either helps you go on a journey, it helps you, it's got like a feminine energy, like it's a kind of love music, or it's like a hate music, it's like a war music. So there's like love, hate, and mystery. And I think most music falls into those three categories. And some music manages to balance all those categories if it's really good, but usually it's an album, a really good album can comprehend these that like life as a journey, life as love, and life as hate or war or conflict. And that's where an album can become very very powerful to listen to in full, as opposed to just only listening to songs, and then moving on to something completely different genre. So that's what I have. That's my take on that music in general. Someone mentions Seeger mentions the coat of arms. Yeah, absolutely. That's something to consider. Is there was an art style when it came to building coat of arms, and that's something that we should be integrating, somehow working out how to modernize. I don't have the image in my head at this point. I can't really describe it, but certainly that's something that is key to it. Oh yes, someone found the word kitschy. So Trumpet of Patriots, very kitschy. You see that? We got to avoid. I use the word cringe, kitsch. I actually have never seen it what it's described as, but my understanding is just that it's cringe, that it's classless, it's tacky. But I wonder what Google says. Kitsch, kitschy, kitschy. I'm not spelling it right. Considered to be in poor taste because of excessive garishness, or sentimentality, but sometimes appreciated in an ironic or knowing way. Kitschy pop culture, kitschy souvenir shops. I think I'm pronouncing that right. But yeah, that's what Jacob, well, that's what his criticism is of a lot of art styles attached to politics, is that it's too kitsch. He uses that word a lot. Hey, Thomas, what do you think about... Oh, sorry, I read that one already. Yeah, AI slop. Yeah, it's literally AI slop. Like, that Trumpet of Patriots stuff, I cannot express enough how much I hate it. It is absolute slop. Yeah, I won't even go into much detail. It's just the slop. Someone says, I like the culture thug aesthetic that Rob Rundo and Wilder Rice promote. The term itself is very accurate for modern active white nationalism and the 3.0 model. Absolutely. This is all inspired and ties in with the 3.0 model. I want to bring it to the next level, you know. Well, we all need to bring it to the next level. It's not about me. It's how is this going to be expressed in a specifically Australian, and also how do we express it in not just purely a 25-year-old I go to the gym aesthetic, because that is a component. You've got all these different influences as to how to build an overall aesthetic. You've got the militant black bloc. You've got the 25-year-old active club. I go to the gym and lift weights and box and listen to, kind of like, you know, Wigger music or whatever. You've got the cultural community, harmony, old English folk music, girls dancing around the maypole aesthetic, the cottagecore. And then there has to be another layer on top of that. So how do you blend those three? And then with a professional political outlet that isn't too bureaucratic and boring. So there's layers to this that need to be infused together. And, I've talked about how the overall art style is that specific. Just go on my page and just type in Yngwie Oddick. And I think I've only posted it once on my Telegram. Yngwie Oddick. Huh. Hold on. Oh, because I put spaces in it. That's why. Because I was being all... I'll just reshare it. So yeah, if you've got me on Telegram, I'm just resharing that on my Uncensored and my... So that's what I'm talking about. I like that color scheme. I like Australia. You'll notice the EAM flag and the NSN flag are both that deep blue with that sharp red on the white. And that's our color scheme. We're always going to stay with that. But what I was really impressed with is the use of shadows. I was really impressed with the gold as well. I never considered integrating gold into our color scheme for like websites, brochures, pamphlets, stuff like that. So I don't want it to be too heavy. It can't be too maximalist. It can't be too much going on. But that's where I'm getting at. So what I've done is I've written out in my notebook how I'm going to put forward a tender, what's called a tender. If you don't know what a tender is, it's basically like an open offer. It's like I want to put up, I'm going to make a page after the stream, which is just going to be called Project Yngwie Oddick or Yngwie Oddick Project. And I'm going to write out, I'm going to type up everything I've written out here and what I've discussed with you guys and put that as an open tender to say, if anyone has graphic design experience, here's what I'm looking for. Here's what we've worked on so far. Here's our inspiration. So I can just dump all, I've got a folder of art styles and a folder of things other guys have sent to me that I can put in the page. That will then help us build a branding deck. That's what I want to do. I want to build a branding deck. I want to pick the top sort of three or five submissions. It's not something that's going to be decided on, obviously, this week or even really this month. I think people need at least 1 or 2 months to put forward a draft of a brand. And I use that image as like that to me is not the be all and end all, but that to me is like the template. That's not the template, but that is the... that is the status, not status quo, but that is the standard. Like, it needs to be of that standard. Don't copy that, but consider what I'm appreciating about that image and realize how can that be fleshed out. What would a website look like in that style? What would a pamphlet or brochure look like in that style? And don't be afraid to use the color black either, to tie in a little bit of the NSN or the militancy, tie the whole project together a little bit more streamlined. So it's not like two completely separate art styles. Obviously, Jacob has his own art style, and I don't want to step on his toes. But this is obviously a total overarching brand. If you're not aware of what we're doing, I've already explained it on stream enough. But we are building an overarching brand. And then things like NSN and EAM and all these things and a political party are all ultimately going to be like sub-brands of an overarching White Australia project. So what have we got here? Back to the comments. Can your mic go up? I spent like $250 getting a Rode really good mic. I've got it in my settings at full volume. The mic is, you know, about 30 centimeters from my face. No. And I already speak loud enough. So just turn your volume up on max on all your settings if you somehow can't hear me. Seeger says, as a Dane, I find your folk song Waltzing Matilda quite catchy. Yeah, exactly. That's one thing that's going to be really hard to integrate, is the kind of folk music from pre-Federation, you know, because that time period, I mean, Jacob loves it. I mean, if you look at a lot of the songs and music Jacob puts out, it's very like 1910s and kind of like, I imagine I'm in the Wild Wild West sometimes and it's like someone's playing on one of those crappy pianos. I it's not, it's personally not my style. I want to build a slightly different style, but obviously, Waltzing Matilda in itself, I don't want to like futurize it. I don't want to modernize it too much. We sang it and we integrate it into our model. But yeah, there's marching songs. I think marching songs can be, Jacob works with a guy called, there's a guy that helps with him, Cyber Nazi, I think is his name. And he makes a lot of the backing tracks and backing music, and is trying to create, he's probably the person that's done the most work at blending, like a kind of this, folk, you know, kind of tinkery orchestral folk music with a kind of futuristic, orchestra. And, yeah, Jacob really likes it. Jacob is a massive fan. I'm not a massive fan. It's not my vibe. But I can respect the trade. I can respect the art of it. So I'm not looking for that. I'm looking for something different. And I don't know how to explain it because I'm not properly professionally trained. But it's close, but it's not quite there. It needs to be blended somehow. There's a band that I really like. It's like that, you know, Vikings LARP band, Helvigan, is that how you pronounce it? Helvigan, Wardrunner is the, so Helvigan, I think that's one of the songs. Yeah, Wardrunner. You know, that kind of Scandinavian Viking LARP, you know, I love it. You know, I love it. You know, I'm always going to LARP. I love it. They have a sound that resonates deep in my soul. Their music, I really like their music. I don't really study music much, but they're something about it. It's archaic. They've got an archaic sound in a good way. It's folk. It's archaic. It's Nordic. It's Germanic. I like that. That's where I'm at in my sort of music space. How do we integrate Waltzing Matilda and orchestra and like that? That's a fucking project. Like, I'm not even going to begin doing that. But if you want my take, it's that we need a little bit more of that put into the mix. That to me is very, and you'll find that that is a Nazi adjacent scene. They won't call themselves Nazis. They might even say on stage, we don't like Nazis. We don't tolerate Nazis. You know, they might say shit like that, but probably 90% of their audience are adjacent to white nationalism. That's just, you know, when you go to one of their concerts, I've had mates go, I haven't gone, but I probably will go to the next one. I think they're on tour soon. Yeah, like it's all white, basically. It's like 99% white. And there's a lot of music like that where it's, you know, even death metal and black metal is like implicitly white as well. But I much prefer that style. It's like this kind of folkish, it's got a folkish aesthetic to it, but it's still militant. Yeah. But yeah, how do we put the marching songs in as well? I think we just do them. I think we just turn them, we just start bread and butter. You just start by just doing the songs and getting the recordings and getting the footage of the guys marching with the songs and codifying them that way. So, yeah. Someone says, I'm too old, you'll have to speak up. You'll just have to turn up all your shit on your computer, old man. Someone says, do I like Thulean Mysteries and Ways of Yore? Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was saying before. It's great. I really like that style of music. Pro-white folk music represent. Yeah, absolutely. Here we go. Do you know Hale Young? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but yeah, I do know that one. I can visually see the word and be like, yeah, I've listened to all their music as well. I really like them as well. So I like all that Nordic LARP music. I love a good LARP. Obviously, I use the word LARP not sparingly, abundantly. We need to realize that politics is performance art. And the left have really cringe and kitsch performance art. The center are cringe and kitsch. Like, we're not up against a very strong enemy in that regard. They don't understand aesthetics. Their aesthetic style is gross and ugly. And the best they can do is a kind of new age corporatism, which doesn't get it. We have the opportunity, especially here in Australia, because we're a small country, we have the opportunity to absolutely dominate the market politically from just purely an aesthetic point of view. And some of the stuff we've done with NSN, people have been like, oh, I don't like your LARP. But then some of the images, when I've been in arguments with people online, there's an image of us burning the Chinese flag outside the Chinese embassy, and we're all in the black block and the flag's on fire. And it just... As the Zoomers will say, it just slaps. Like that one image, like I've reposted it multiple times because every time I see it, I'm just like, you can start to understand the art style when you see that image. Just the uniformity and the depth and then the colors popping off the black block, like the Chinese flag in flames. And you can tell it's in Melbourne as well, because it's got that very Tooraki, you know, these big buildings and lots of big trees. It's quite a beautiful suburb for a suburb. It's just 21st century Natsoc agitation. It's militant. It's staunch. It's not overly beautiful. It's not really focused on beauty as a concept, but it is aesthetic. And all the boys are fit and healthy, or 90% of the boys are fit and healthy. And it has a feel to it. You can really feel like you were there when you see that image. It's a great image if you haven't seen it. I'll reshare it so you know what I'm talking about. That's the NSN aesthetic, which obviously has to be tied in. It has to be tied in with the greater white Australian aesthetic. I don't even know where to search to find that image. Oh, I think it was on Australdom, which was another one of Jacob's kind of aesthetic projects. Australdom. He was like, I'm going to make a Australdom. Here we go. So he kind of created a NSN specific art style. I'll share some of the Australdom stuff that I think is quite a cool look. Here we go. I'll share both of these on my page. So obviously that's a very specific NSN version. So if you go on my Telegram right now, I've just shared that. I'm sorry, I'm a boomer. I can't put stuff up for you. I can. I'm just lazy. I've just got too much on my plate to learn new skills. Such as how to do that. One day we'll have a guy that works full time and he can be like my Jamie or whatever, like the Joe Rogan thing. But yeah, it's just, yeah. If you see that, like with the banner's popping. So that's a specific art style. I like that. That's, if you look at that art style that Jacob's done, it's not my personal favorite, but it's very nice. I do appreciate its aesthetics. It does pop. We had one of our guys that's a blacksmith. He actually made that like NSN totem pole, and then the banner comes off the totem pole. Again, you have to understand about politics, the need for unique and punchy aesthetics, the need for an art style. Even if you don't agree with the art style, you have to agree that we can't be boring. There does have to be an element of performance art, but it has to be, you know, there's like left-wing performance art, and then there's like the SS marching down the street. It's like you can see the complete opposite nature of left-wing performance art and right-wing performance art. And Hitler understood the spectacle. Thomas Rousseau from Patriot Front, he understands the spectacle. You have to create right-wing performance art. And they'll call you feds, they'll call you LARPers, they'll like they're just because they're idiots, because the right wing is boring, unimaginative, infertile, sterile, gay, retarded. Like the right wing, the conservatives, they're a pack of retards. They're just a gaggle of fucking headless chooks, disorganized retards being led by people with money that are fucking clueless. They're really afraid of us. And I spoke to someone recently, I won't name them by name, someone that was deep within the political establishment that said, the main reason why they fear you guys so much is you can get 100 men or almost 100 men to run 10 kilometers for a political purpose, and they can't even get 100 men to a political meeting. They can't even get 100 people to sit around and eat cake, and you can get 100 men to run 10K. For the most extreme right-wing possible ideology, and the center-right can't do that. Clive Palmer can't get struggles. Clive Palmer struggles to get 100 people in a room with all his money, with all his the spectacle that he can put on, with all the money he has, hire a beautiful hall and have catering and all that, and then they get 100 people in the room and they're like, oh, you know, great political meeting. So imagine how many people we could get in the room with $120 million per 4 year budget or whatever he spent. You know, I think he spent 80 million the previous 4 years, and I think he's spending 100 or 120 million over the next 4 years. So, I mean, that is crazy. We have spent fucking the previous 4 years, it wouldn't even be, I mean, if you take away legal fees, it wouldn't even be 50 grand on the project. So, I mean, that's absolute peanut money. Yeah, so we would probably have like 1 million people in the hall. With that, with if we were looking in the hundreds of millions of dollars, but yeah, I won't harp on too much about that. Someone says, "I am, you are, we are Australian" is the worst fucking song down under. Yeah, I agree. It's absolute cringe. Yeah, Conservative Zog has the worst aesthetics. Yeah, I think everyone gets it. I don't think I need to talk too much about it. Someone says, can Clive really be that stupid? Yeah, he can be. Like, it's not necessarily stupidity, it's being out of touch. At a certain point, people just they don't have any vitality left. They just become slop. And you are what you increasingly do. So if you are a businessman and you're a multimillionaire and you're not really, you know, what is he in the mining sector? He's not really. The mining sector is not exactly known for its expressed interest in aesthetics and marketing. They just dig shit out of the ground. So you would think that they would be more interested in that from the kind of dwarven artistic style. If you wanted to get esoteric, if I ran a mining company, I would be getting pretty deep on the dwarven esoterics. But that's just how I am. I'm like a kind of artistically, kind of esoterically minded person. No matter what it is that I do, I'm going to be considering like deeper notions of things and how they integrate into a singular concept. If I made a mining company, I would be like consulting Varg or something on like what he thinks of dwarves and gold mining, and then I'd be like integrating that into my brand. You know, especially if I had like $100 million to fucking waste on projects like Clive Palmer does. So, yeah, where was I going with that? Yeah, they're not necessarily stupid. I mean, it comes across as stupidity, but it's just that they know their trade, they don't know other trades. Our trade needs to be statecraft, and a big part of statecraft is culture and aesthetics. Tom, can you critique the Battle of Cavill Street 1936, the one with Mosley against the Jews and the police? Stood them down, and they were like, "Yeah, all right, we won't punch on." And then they end up punching on, I think, anyway. And then I think they won. I think they won the battle. Yeah, I mean, what do you want me to say, bro? Like, we're talking about fucking building aesthetics. Come on. Let's keep it on topic. Someone says, thoughts on the White Australia poster aesthetic. White Australia poster aesthetic. White Australia poster aesthetic. I'm not sure of the one that you're talking about, Mr. Some Dude Number One. White Australia poster aesthetic. Oh, do you mean the 1910s one? There's like one from the 1910s, like that old school. Yeah, that again, that's like the Wild Wild West, like piano music aesthetic. Yeah, I don't like that general style, but it has huge historical gravity to it. I mean, that poster is a cool poster because it represented a time and a place and a style. I don't like that style. I don't want to recreate that style. Can that style somehow integrate into our aesthetic? Absolutely, absolutely. It has an aesthetic to it. It does. We can integrate parts of it. We can take a part of that style, certainly. But nah, it's I would call it I would just say it leans a little bit too much on the look, if you can't put up something better, you shouldn't criticize. So I won't criticize it too much because I so far have not been able to put up something better than it. But that's what I want to create. I want to create something better than it. Yeah. Yeah. Alrighty. Tom, have you ever seen Never Too Young for a Vietnam flashback and Major Sam edits on YouTube? The vibes are great. Yeah, I have. I've seen that Major Sam. I haven't seen that other one, the Vietnam flashback one, but I've seen videos that are very similar. I've seen videos very similar. So, yeah, I like that. Look, the hype edits are great. The TikTok edits, the Instagram edits, sure, it's awesome. How do we integrate that into print material? How do we integrate that into a website? How do we integrate that into architecture? If we were, obviously, this is really pipe dreamy here, but there is an architect that's reached out. We've recruited an architect recently, and the conversation I had with him was, how do we recreate an architectural style that is implicitly, Germanic, that's implicitly Anglo-Saxon, that has an Australian vibe to it. But, personally, I really like that ski lodge kind of, those big balconies and those big gable to gable roofs, and like the certain pitch on the roof as well, I think is important. And I really like that style. How do we make that kind of a bit more Australiana? And what does that look like in the 21st century? And what does it look like as a small house? And what does it look like as a community building? Like if we were to build a longhouse, so to speak. I know that word again, longhouse. I know, I know. I have not worked out how to codify, how to not use that word in other contexts other than the context that you all know it as. But how to build a community center? How to build basically a racist church, even if you want to look at it from that perspective. I mean, I know there's a beautiful building that's. I mean, I wouldn't call it beautiful. It's quite utilitarian, but it's for the money they had, it's quite a large building. For National Alliance, Wilhelm Luther Pierce, they built a headquarters. How would you spice that up even more? National Alliance headquarters. I can't remember what state that's in. Nah. Maybe I'm thinking of something else. Not Pocahontas County. What is that? Nah, it's not coming out with the image that I thought. It's coming out with like a really boring building. That's not what I remember. I remember it had a big gable to gable roof on it. And it had like a. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm thinking of a different Nazi headquarters. Yeah. National Alliance. West Virginia. I'm sure someone will have an image for me. They'll probably DM it to me. But yeah, that's something that I would consider as well. Like, what is this Ingveonic style if it was going to reach into things like architecture? When everything that you do as a political party, everything that you do, is is entwined. It has to be entwined in the expression of your belief system. You can't, and I understand that's why people don't like rap music, for example, in the scene, because they don't want any rap music at all, full stop. Not just like, oh, it's okay because it's white and it's got white nationalist themes in it. No, like the whole thing has to go, the same way that Adolf Hitler wouldn't have been an approver of German National Socialist jazz music. He would have been like, no, all jazz has to go. And there's pros and cons to having that mentality, because yes, it's a purity spiral. Life is a purity spiral, but also we have to acknowledge, well, why does it exist? Why did jazz music come about? And would jazz music or something equivalent have come about even without Negroes and Jews? And people will say this is a logical fallacy. They'll say, oh, well, would porn come about without Jews? It's like, of course, all right? There's baselessness within everyone, not just the Jews. Like, obviously, we have a baselessness and the enemy knows how to appeal to it. But I'm not saying that Germany should have built a National Socialist jazz. What I'm saying is that there needs to be a balance between Apollyon and Dionysian. Like, you can't just have purely, like, you don't want to fly too close to the sun. You need to party, and white people need to learn to party again. You need to put on the Nazi rave. You need to have racist music that is fun, that you can dance to, that's not just serious or screamo or Viking LARP. There needs to be music in our scene, because where this pipe dream is going is, well, we're going to be building headquarters at some point when we've got the resources. We're going to be building, beautiful buildings, homes and community centers. What's that going to look like physically? What material is it going to be used? How is it going to blend into the landscape but show this kind of Faustian or Aryan or Ingveonic identity, this white nationalist identity? What kind of music is going to be played when we have a community event? What kind of music is going to be played when all the families, when all the babies get tucked into bed and all the, people in their early 20s and stuff want to dance and have fun and get drunk? And have a so-called fertility festival, because you've got to think about where this is going. When we think about, you can't subtract that from culture. That is culture. Now, should we have a neo-Nazi nightclub? No, nightclubs are obviously degenerate. We've seen these videos going viral with Andrew Tate with a bunch of sluts at a nightclub, and it's just gross. Like it's just mulatto culture. Like, it makes me feel like I remember going nightclubbing as a young guy and just getting drunk and dancing the whole time. But, I never sat there smoking shisha and just trying to look cool. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's like, it's some weird bio spirit. It's some weird energy that people want to just sit around in a really noisy environment where you can't even hear yourself think and just try to look cool. Like, to me, it's like, I don't think it was degenerate. I don't think it's that degenerate to go out nightclubbing and go get drunk and party and dance and try to meet the opposite sex. I don't think that's degenerate. I think that's a degenerate outlet of it. But in itself, it is just the only outlet that was presented to us living in industrialized megapolis like Melbourne, 5 million people. There wasn't some outlet for us to do that as like 18-year-olds or as 21-year-olds. There wasn't, and by 21 we stopped doing it, most of us. But where I'm going with this is a lot of young people, a lot of white people, a lot of things that are white-coded that are full of leftoids, are things like bushdoofs, things like, there's big festivals, big music festivals, and that's where all the young white kids are out partying and dancing. And yeah, they're doing drugs and stuff like that as well. But in Australia, that is huge. That's a huge part of our culture. Young white people will go out, 5 times a year, 4 times a year. They'll go to these big bushdoofs, and they'll be like 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 people on a giant farm, and they'll just set up a massive stage or stadium or whatever, and they'll play techno or EDM or whatever. They'll play these kind of types of music that people can just get drunk or be on drugs and just dance to. And obviously, a lot of the prudish people will be like, oh, that's disgusting. But what they don't realize is that we had that in a non technological and non megaropolis society. We had that at a local community level. We had that for thousands of years. We had fertility festivals, you know, four times or six times or eight times a year. We had these festivals where families and young people would get together and dance and celebrate and feast. And they did it as friends. They did it as a fey tree. They did it as a tribe. They did it as a hundred people or a couple hundred people, or maybe even a couple thousand people. Obviously, they didn't do it in this kind of really expansive sense, or not too much anyway, maybe once a year. They did it in these smaller kind of senses. But this was, this is an important part of our culture. And when you have this like prudish, you know, everyone must go to church and, you know, and, you know, like the parents have to sit there and watch the fucking teenagers at all times. And I mean, this kind of culture is sterile, it's infertile, and it's going to lead to the destruction of the white race on a long enough timeline, which it has. What's happened is, in the absence of a strong, powerful culture, correctly utilizing the energies necessary to holistically propel society in the right direction, instead, it's tried to ban these things. And then what's happened is a system of culture has arisen innately and propelled by the Jews, of course, but it has arisen innately through the people in the absence of it existing through the structure of the people. So if we wish to save the white race, we need to consider not banning bushdoofs. We need to consider, well, what is it that appeals to young people and why are they going to bushdoofs? And how do we convert that from being a left-coded activity into a right-coded activity? Or how do we convert it from a liberal democracy variant into a white nationalist variant? That's where our heads need to be at. That's more important than anything that fucking homosexual spics are talking about that are obsessed with schizophrenic Negroes. I mean, these people are fucking short-sighted. Really, really short-sighted to think that it's just, you know, join the Republican Party. You know, like, this is just nonsense, absolute nonsense. What we need to do is we need to create these anti-fragile structures that are explicitly or implicitly, one or the other. It doesn't have to be all explicit. And what I mean by that is you can advertise it as a purely white nationalist thing, or it can be implicitly white nationalist without needing to explicitly say it. You just don't denounce. You just don't do what a lot of these people that are in control already with these things, where they feel the need to denounce white nationalism or call white nationalism losers. Or you don't need to do that. You don't need to do, unless you're an enemy agent, unless you're literally an enemy of the white race, well, then you would feel the need to do it. Or you're a moral coward, which you'll see with a lot of artists are moral cowards. They will produce something that is implicitly Aryan, that's implicitly white, and then they will feel the need, because they realize how implicitly white it is that they're doing, they'll feel the need to make some sort of proclamation, some sort of statement, and proclaim their dislike for being too explicitly pro-white, that things have to stay only implicitly white. But everyone can adopt the implicitly white identity. It just so happens that 99% of the audience are white, and probably straight as well. So this is the power of metapolitics, this is the power of culture. We can ignore this reality and be prudes, or we can accept that we need to have Nazi bushdoofs and Nazi community festivals. And how do we integrate for our own children, whether they're teenagers or whether they're in their early 20s, or young guys that we recruit, young girls that we recruit, how do we have a natural expression of identity that ties in with what young people want and need to do, what's part of their biospirit, which is to party, to have, I mean, we all do, it's not just young people, we all need a party, we all need to have fun. That is a rule. Yeah, it is a rule. It's a fact. We have to have fun. We have to have fun doing it. And as a culture, we need to be staunch and we need to be militant, but we also need to be larrikins. And that ties in with that Australian ethos. It's not just innovative. If I was to do the big three, it would be staunch, innovative, and larrikin. right? Australians are troublemakers, they're larrikins. Australians know how to have fun. We all know how to have fun, but Australians, I think that's the way that it has always been expressed in Australian culture, is that it has a larrikin culture. And we can be disciplined. Australian soldiers are disciplined, but they're disciplined and they're larrikins. We are actually really true to the form, to the archetype. And that shouldn't be tried to be sterilized, that archetype. It should maintain itself for what it is. And when you think about the Anzacs, when you think about the Diggers, when you go back, you'll see that they were some of the most disciplined soldiers, but also when it was knockoff time, you know what I mean? They became the least disciplined. So it was like this weird blend of discipline and ill discipline. It's like disciplined when they needed to be, and then, all right, it's knockoff time, we're getting drunk, and then they just like ran amok and like accidentally killed people in Cairo, like before they went to Gallipoli. Like they just ran amok and like stole goats and got drunk and pushed over the market stalls and behaved in inappropriate and unprofessional ways. But you know what I mean? It was like there's something Viking about that. Yeah. You can try and change it if you want, but you'll fail. All right, we might wrap it up. How long are we going for? 2 hours, I think. Tom's nailing it here. Yes. Melody over noise. Bavarian style houses are great. Reading about the Ingvaeonic, the Anglo-Frisian parent language. Those would be the same people who later formed the Hanseatic League. I don't know what that is. I've never heard of that before. BUF flag, Mosley with a lightning bolt is sick. The black shirts had a great aesthetic. Wasn't as good as the Nazis, but up there. BUF was Kino. Mosey was the last great Anglo-Saxon aristocrat. He got it. This is the best podcast since. Thanks, Tom. Malady over noise. Jazz is the only art form that is biracial. Both blacks and whites contributed to it. It's basically classical music with rhythmic basis. They want to gaslight us that it's only a black music, but this is apparently wrong if you know your history. Yeah, oh, this guy's called Decommissioned Musician, so he probably knows what he's talking about. Yeah, absolutely. I think that we need a white rhythm. We need a white rhythm. So because whites lost their rhythm, or whites had their rhythm downplayed, it left a rhythm vacuum where you have things like jazz. I don't think a society can exist where it only has like Mozart and, Beethoven and Wagner and, you know what I mean? Like, to me, this stuff is great. It's amazing, but it's not party music. You can't party to it. It's an experience. It's an authentic experience. And it heightens the senses and it elevates society as a concept, but it's not a party. You can't party. And white people need to learn how to party again. This is crucial for our culture to succeed and survive and thrive. And we can do it in a vacuum where we're not propagated with Jewish ideals. We find it straight away. It always will come to fruition. It's just about coding it to have the holistic understanding. Yeah. And then Decommissioned Musician says, even though whites have a superior culture, it doesn't mean we can't learn from other people's. Well, I think I would word it differently to that. I don't think we need to really learn from them other than the fact that we need to learn to remember what we had. If we lose our rhythm and then we see other people with a rhythm, we go, oh, look at that rhythm. Oh, look, they can bop. And then it makes white people like detach from their own culture and then start listening to this rhythmic nigger bop. And it's like, well, if we just had separation, complete separation, we would have remembered our own bop anyway. You know, we need white bop. I know that sounds silly, but it's true. Like, that's why you need to have that balance. You need to have that folk music. You need to have that bop, that rhythm that comes from within the folk and expresses itself through localism. And then we also need to have the top down, like aristocratic music that like lifts society up from the top. So it's like, we need to lift from the bottom up and pull from the top up. Which is like everything. Every order needs to do that. Every order needs to have grassroots and a top-down approach. It's not one or the other. There's no system of government or power or strength that doesn't work out how to balance these concepts, to their full potential. Someone says we need to refrain from inebriation. Inebriation, intoxication brings downfall. Look, I think it just needs to be balanced correctly. I'm not a prude. The question, the obviously I did a stream the other day where I said, are there Indians in heaven or are there bees in heaven? Well, it's an important question because if you ask a Mormon, is there alcohol in heaven? They would say no. And that's why they don't drink alcohol. Is there coffee in heaven? No. That's why they don't drink coffee. So what it really comes down to is what is your version of heaven? And I would love for there to be a heaven. What I would want to work towards is a heaven where there isn't alcohol, where you don't need alcohol, where you can live in that moment and you can have no inebriation and you can still get to that state of community ecstasy, where you can still get to that state where you can be at a community festival and reach that same point that you can when you're a little tipsy. Everyone that has had a few drinks, day drinking, and it's a hot summer's day or a hot spring day, and you're at a bar and you're in the outdoor drinking area or whatever, and you buy that third beer or that third glass of wine or whatever, and you're kind of like, you've got like a view and you're looking at something and the sun kind of flickers and you're kind of just like, fuck, it just hits you. Like you feel it, like not the alcohol, but just like the ecstasy of life. You're just like, fuck, this is great. Like, I should do this at least once a month. This is just a vibe. It's just a feeling. And it's not too noisy. It's not, you don't see any non-white people ideally. It's just white people just socializing, having fun, having that. There's just, everyone's dressed nicely. There's like an aesthetic to it. I don't know how to explain it, but I've only had that feeling maybe 10 or so times in my life. And I've had it a couple times sober, like yesterday. I went to a community festival. I went to like a Scottish Highland festival here in Melbourne, in the outer suburbs. And at the end of it, I was so tired. I just lie down in this park, the park that was attached to it. And there was just pine trees. And I just lie down for like 10 minutes and just stared up at the pine trees. And I felt it. Like I saw the light flicker through the trees and I felt it. I didn't have anything to drink. I wasn't inebriated and I felt it, obviously nowhere near as much, but I felt it a little bit. And my daughter was running around with a pine cone and she was like collecting pine needles off the ground. And I was just an experience where I was just like, I love life. I just got that feeling, that ecstasy and, completely naturally. And yeah, so that's heaven. Like for me, that's like, does that exist in heaven? Like not without hard work, not without trial, not without sacrifice, not without violence, not without, there's a, to me, it's like, it's a balance. Like, the Nordic model, I think there's three heavens and, one of them, only one of the three is Valhalla, which is the fighting and the feasting. And the feasting is obviously getting drunk. And so it's like, it's this war ethos. It's like you fight and you feast and you just eat all this meat and get drunk and feed the ego, fuel the ego. And then you fight and you battle. And it's like, it's a staunch part of our existence as white people. I don't want to leave that behind. I think it's a time and a place. I don't like people that get drunk every week. I don't like people that drink every day. I mean, this is really bad. This is really toxic. But, once a month or once every 6 weeks, why the fuck not? Like, I don't know. Maybe my sons and grandsons will look at me and be like, oh, dad's a degenerate or granddad's a degenerate, Maybe. And I guess if you do the parties correctly, if you really get it in time with nature, if you really sync it up astrologically, you really sync it up with these holy days and you do the fertility festival and you do it just right and you get everything right and you get the music right. Yeah, I'm sure you can do it without alcohol. Absolutely. And young kids don't need it because I think a lot of time when you're like 30 or like, or older, it gives you this feeling of youthfulness just for that moment. Obviously you don't feel as good the next day. So you pay for everything, but it's still worth it. Otherwise, no one would drink alcohol. It's still worth it. And I don't think it's an addiction. I don't think it's a drug addiction. I think it's inebriation. It's just like a little, it's a little something something. And yeah, maybe they'll look at us and be like, look at those degenerates. Maybe in 100 years' time, they'll look back at our generation and be like, oh, they partied and they got drunk while they partied. Oh, degenerates. I don't know. Maybe. Either way, we are what we are. They'll remember us for what we are. But I don't think that's going to change in our generation. And I think that if you try to change it, if you try to be like 100% straight edge, alcohol is the devil. I think some communities might need to do that because they're dealing with so many problems. But again, if you try to do that too much, you try to constrict people too much. I don't believe that we're liberals, and I don't believe that we should become liberals. Liber is the Roman god, Liber. And you've got the Dionysian, you've got the Liber, you've got the what is it, Bracchus? Bracchus, I think, was the temple they banned, and they purged them. I'm pretty sure they long Night of the Long Knived them. I think they killed them all, the Romans, the Bracchus temple, which because it was just too focused on the orgy, and I think it was a damage control thing. Like, oh shit, we're partying too hard. We got to shut this down. Yeah, so balancing the partying element is critical. And I think every community is going to figure it out for themselves. And the ones that don't will be become toxic, and people will leave those communities and they'll join communities that have the partying concept figured out. Like, what's the appropriate amount to party? Because look at Rome. I mean, it just turned into an orgy, didn't it? That's the Liber, that's the liberalism. It just ultimately just becomes just partying for the sake of partying and nothing else. Whereas if you've got a culture of working hard and a culture of fighting and a culture of achieving your goals, and then you let people let their hair down and relax and dance and party, I think that's a good balance. And so my culture with our organization has always been, I don't care if people go and get drunk. I don't necessarily encourage it, but people can. But I tell them, you have to sweat it out. There's two rules. You have to earn it and you have to sweat it out. So you have to do something, you have to achieve a goal beforehand, and then you can go out and get drunk. And then after you get drunk, you have to sweat it out. You have to sober up. The next day, you have to go for a swim or go to the beach or go for a run or lift weights or go to the sauna. You have to sweat it out. You have to get it out of the system. And yeah, that's absolutely critical. That's always been one of my rules. I learned that in the army. And that's why the army had a pretty bad culture with drinking. But anyone that sweated it out didn't have a bad culture with it. They overcame. So I'll pause there. Yeah, there was a big chat just for the subject of alcohol, and it does come up a lot. But yeah, I don't know. The guy that was saying that before about how we should ban alcohol. I mean, yeah. Maybe you do that in your community. You run a dry community. There's a lot of people that run dry communities, and they ban alcohol. Ban alcohol in your own house first, your own children, your own house. Ban alcohol in your own phatry, your friends. Don't whenever you go to someone's house, don't allow there to be alcohol. Don't go over to someone's house if they're going to drink alcohol while you're there. Do that and then see how that plays out. Because yeah, you'll find out. Everyone that thinks that way, you'll find out. If I went to somebody's house and they started smoking meth, I would leave. I would be like, what the fuck? I would want absolutely nothing to do with them. I obviously don't allow meth to be smoked in the org or meth to be smoked in my house. Or, I've banned meth at a per like I don't I've never touched meth. I'm not interested in meth. I don't smoke meth. Like that's where I draw the line in the sand. So it's like, to me, it's like people should live through their own example. People should lead through their own example. It's very easy for me to be like, if I went to somebody's house and they started smoking meth, I would just get up and leave, and I would probably never talk to them again. Or I would never go around to their house again, and I would have a very distant, I wouldn't have much to do with them, because I'm like, I'm not about that life. I'm not interested in that. I know the Nazis took meth in World War II, in order to fucking do 3-day blitzkriegs. That's a little bit different. So my opinion is, if you want to ban smoking, if you want to, you know what I mean, if you want to ban drinking, you should ban it in yourself first, then you should ban it in your family, then you should ban it in your phatry, then you can start looking at, what kind of community you're involved in. So yeah, and lead by example. That's my motto. Someone says, Tom, sorry, my biggest issue with nightclubs is just like pubs where you can actually have a conversation, socialize. It's literally just a weird environment where you drink yourself to the floor just so that you are able to go and talk to a woman who can't even hear you anyway because the music's so loud. Yeah, because it's the problem with nightclubs is it's too rhythmic, it's too animalistic. There's no nuance to it. It's just purely the dancing and the vibes and the inebriation. So it's gone too far. The nightclub has gone too far. It is degenerate. Nightclubs basically should be banned in that sense, but you can't ban it without having a better way of banning it is not to actually ban it, is actually to create a better alternative and then watch people gravitate towards a healthy culture and watch those that gravitate to that culture sink. Someone says, I would love British grime music, Tom. You better not be trolling me. Any music that calls itself grime, I immediately don't want anything to do with it. British grime music. British grime music. What the fuck? Oh, no. I'm not even going to click on it. Yeah. Very funny. You got me. Well done. I like to think my Führer likes the party. Absolutely. Has everyone seen Hitler dancing? Maybe he wasn't inebriated, but maybe he didn't need to be. He was that based. We can achieve high states without alcohol, without intoxicants. Yes, yes, sure. You achieve them. I'll come to your party. We've been drinking alcohol for a long time. We haven't been doing... Well, to be fair, they've been doing mushrooms for a long time as well. But, I've actually never tried mushrooms before. I don't think I ever will. I am concerned about, losing that state of... some people get one-shotted by it. And a lot of people that have done it say, no, that's not possible. It just opens up your neural pathways. It's like, yeah, it does. And you can't ever... not open up those neural pathways. So I kind of like where my headspace is at. I don't feel the need to do them. But I do know our ancestors did them, but I don't think all of them did. Someone says banning substances just makes them cool and interesting. I don't know. Like, I think meth should be banned. Like, I don't think that makes it cool and interesting. I think we should just kill anyone that's the commercial quantities and stuff and how they're rotting the country. It's absolutely destroying us. I think alcohol, obviously, like, people will argue then that, yeah, but I mean, look at all those images from Russia, where all the alcohol brands, all the vodka brands, all the liquor brands, 200 years ago were all Jewish. Like, the Jews were like concocting alcohol. They were like crafting alcohol to basically poison the peasantry. I do think that, yeah, the brewer needs to be a trustworthy person. Absolutely. I think that traditional societies have always had a brewer. There's always been mead. There's always been beer. There's always been wine. But hard liquor, absolutely. Like spirits, as they're called sometimes, bad spirits. There is a lot of historical truth to that, that the Jews have controlled the masses through alcohol. Even the Romans, I think, to an extent, with the wine, the bread and circuses and the wine. It is complicated. And obviously, mead and beer was nowhere near as high alcohol levels for the ancients. Time and a place, obviously. Yeah, everyone agrees, time and a place. Yeah. People asking about pot. I would stay away from it. It's obviously nowhere near as bad as meth, but it's definitely a problem. And also the other thing is, again, like how alcohol is so much stronger than it used to be. The same thing with weed. The weed that people in the 70s were smoking had about 10% of the THC as what kids are smoking these days. So the worst stoner in the 70s smoking all day long, wouldn't have been anywhere near as high as like a teenager that's like buying weed from his drug dealer, around the corner. Like it's what's going on right now. They've selectively bred them to be so high in THC and so high in the kind of brain rotting properties that it's causing schizophrenia, and not in like a in a in like a schizophrenic or Sears way, in just like a retard way. It's just turning people into retards. So no, I'm not. Look, if it's something you do once a month, I won't hold it against you. It's not a big deal. But if it's something you're doing every day, you're a retard, and you should really stop doing that. Somehow we got on. We were talking about culture, and somehow we descended into. It's because when you talk about partying, everyone's like, "But what about drugs, Tom? Can we party with drugs?" It's like, probably not. Probably not a good idea. But alcohol's a drug. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Is there alcohol in heaven? No, there's probably not. Like, if we want to be honest, there's probably not. It's just not on my list of priorities, creating a dry society. I think we gotta just manage it in the right direction and move it in the right direction and wean the people off it. But I don't think you want to kill everyone's buzz just straight off the bat. By the way, we're a dry society. You're not allowed to bring alcohol to the Nazi bush rave. Ah, oh, okay, all right, fine. You know what I mean? It's like, You gotta earn it. To me, you gotta earn it. You wanna party? You gotta work. You work, and then you party, and then you work some more. It's gotta be like a party sandwich. And where society collapses is where the party sandwich just becomes, it's just all you do is party. And you gotta earn it. You do have to earn it, or society crumbles. So, anyway, I'm gonna leave it there. There's not really much else of interest in the comment section. I'm gonna type up all this stuff and put it forward. And yeah, if you're a graphic designer, if you have some skills and you want to reach out, I will probably just make like a Telegram specifically for it, so you can message that instead of direct message me. And yeah, I've got half a dozen guys working on the project at the moment, and I've got some subcontract from outside of the community, some private individuals that are, they haven't been paid yet. They haven't been paid yet, but they're open-minded to helping us for a small amount of money. We'll see whether the community can put forward a better draft than these kind of paid professionals that are outside the community. I would much rather go with someone whose heart is in it. Like, to me, the heart has to triumph over money. To me, the will has to triumph over, the mercantile. Our victory doesn't come from we don't pay anyone. Oh, sorry, we can compensate people within our own scene, but we're not like. We don't need mercenaries. We have to create a system where we don't require mercenaries. I don't like mercenaries. I don't like mercantilism. We need to create idealists. We need to somehow win just through a triumph of the will. Like, things have to come from good vibes. They have to come from the right. People should go to work for the right reasons, not to pay a mortgage, for example. Another example was, Chat GPT or whatever, or Grok. People are writing out, drafts of, things that need to be done, and they're just putting prompts into the to Grok or Chat GPT. And it's like, I know a lot of people like AI, but we shouldn't be relying on it in that sense. We should separate it from the political. I'm sure it has a purpose somewhere, but we have to be very careful to not have our politics relying on stuff like that. I try to handwrite everything and then type up, or just type up. I try not to. There's a lot of people that do it and will give me notes, and will assist, but I try to keep my mind completely fresh from what the. What's scary is what I have read is how good it is. Someone will send me something, like I'll be doing a project, I'll be halfway through it, and someone will send me my own project to me that Grok has made, and it is surprisingly good and surprisingly accurate, and that is scary. That's something that I'm wrestling with in my own mind. But I'm just making sure that I'm not influenced by it, and then I just do my own work in my own cave, and I'm not. I don't want to be influenced by it. It can exist and it can be a reference point, but I don't want it to govern how I think. It's very scary stuff, much scarier than alcohol. Where are we at? What are the last comments? Yeah, partying all the time for no reason without earning it is for teenagers. Well, even then, I don't think teenagers should do it. They should still earn it. Because you just feel gross, and it just creates a gross culture. I'm listening to this while walking on a misty, foggy English night. Appreciate the stream, Tom. Do salvia and talk to the gods or something else. Scary jokes, don't do that. What? Probably drug talk, I don't know what that means. Anglobard, I'm commenting half an hour late from the live stream. There's an awesome culture in the European white national scene with events, music, dance, and a whole parallel society. Everything from lullabies to folk music around the campfire to ballroom events. Yeah, exactly. And that's what we need to work on here in Australia. The Europeans are actually way ahead of us in terms of that. I saw the Ukrainians do a folk festival before the Ukrainian war broke out. And they had like a big family day and they did it at like a castle or like a fortress that they made. And it was just cool. It was really awesome. We need to do stuff like that. Like just build things at a bigger level. Someone says, come to England and I'll give you an autograph. What? And I'll give you me autograph. I don't know what the fuck that means. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure. I'll let this come through. 20 seconds. Good night all / good day to those that are in Australia. Yeah. Help me if you can. If you got graphic design friends, if you're a graphic designer yourself, help us out. Help us build a project. And consider the metapolitical implications of building a new aesthetics. A new dream, a new vision of what the 21st century for white people looks like. So that when someone says, well, what's white culture? We don't just need to point to tradition. We don't just point to the ancients or the medievals or the Renaissance. We can point to what we're doing right now. We can say, well, this is white culture. And we need it to be absolutely fantastic. We need it to be beautiful. We need it to be staunch. It needs to be overwhelming. It needs to be overflowing with culture and pride. So...